So much the better, really. Now, in the studio with me is Stacey Jade Mason, an extraordinary woman, particularly as she's a survivor of child sexual exploitation. We've heard so much about it on the news, haven't we, recently. At the age of 14, she said she was groomed by an older man, and she's now working to make sure it doesn't happen to other children by making sure they know how to spot the signs that something's happening to them. And she's the founder of her own company, Creative Optimistic Visions, which is something to do with COVID there, isn't there? There's a COV.
That's right, yeah, COV, yeah.
So what did you do? Think, okay, I'm from Coventry, I need to make sure that we get COVID there and then try and find words to fit, or did it just the whole thing come to you?
To be honest, it was pretty much like that, yeah. I mean, the idea of COV, to be honest, it didn't plan out exactly how it has become, to be honest. I mean, at first it was just a simple idea of how to incorporate the protective behaviours process, which is practical, down-to-earth approach around feeling safe, and how I could engage young people in this process, but using an engagement tool, either like dance or music, because I do like to dance in my spare time. So I did like the idea of COV, because obviously I'm just your normal average COV kid, and I did want to put that in there because I'm proud of where I've come from. It's my hometown, and at the time, with the idea of dance in there, it sounded like a great name for a group. But then never did I realise that actually I would come away from that and write the projects that I have written and to become a community interest company.
There's lots of things that you're doing in there. There's lots of engaging and enabling and feelings and stuff. So we'll break it down and find out what it all means.
Yeah.
In just a mo, if we may, as Stacey Jade. First of all,
BBC Coventry and Warwickshire Travel.
Let's get the latest with Sarah Tilley.
Thank you, Vic. Good afternoon. There's a couple of problems. Firstly, the southbound M6 still has one lane closed on the exit slip at Junction 1 for Rugby. There's a broken down vehicle and recovery work there, so a bit of extra caution needed on that southbound side. And it's still very slow north of Junction 5 on the M6. So really from the Castle Bromwich turn up towards Junction 7 at Great Bar, there's a lot of congestion there. The road was closed for several hours after a serious accident. It has all now reopened, but it's still taking a little while longer for those delays to ease. And there are still restrictions in Coventry on the A444, the Charles Moore bypass. You've got major roadworks between the Festival Island and the turn for Whitley, so there are a combination of restrictions there. Public transport's all running well. If you see a problem, call us on 0345 900 5200.
We surely will. Thank you very much indeed, Sarah Tilley. Now, taking a look at your weather, summer's on the way tomorrow, but it is on the way. Today, though, we'll have to batten down the hatches and put up with a little bit of wind. Nowhere near like we saw yesterday and overnight, though. 17 is your best today, 63 degrees in Fahrenheit. Should dry up as well, leaving us with just the odd shower. The breeze starting to die down during the course of tonight, perhaps an odd shower again. 8 Celsius is your low, 46 degrees in Fahrenheit tonight. Now tomorrow, fine sunshine, light winds. I promise you it'd be all right. Might be the odd shower tomorrow afternoon, but most places staying dry all day. 17 your best tomorrow, 63 degrees in Fahrenheit, and it's warming up as we move through the week and should be mostly dry as well.
Travel you trust.
We are BBC Coventry and Warwickshire.
As we approach 12:30, let's see how the cricket is going. Warwickshire need a lot of wickets, but the weather was going against them a little bit earlier. Let's see if it's brightened up now with Mike Taylor.
Oh, it would that it had, but they have only one wicket this morning. We've been playing for an hour after a slightly delayed start. Middlesex are 88 for 2, replying to Warwickshire's 342. They had an early wicket when Sam Robson was caught at slip by Varun Chopper off Chris Wright, but missed a chance about 20 minutes after that when Owen Morgan, the former England one-day captain, was dropped by Chopper at slip off Keith Barker. It was a sharp, high chance to Chopper's right. It might really have been in the grasp of the wicketkeeper but Tim Ambrose, but he left it for Chopra, and Chopra couldn't hang on. So Morgan, in company with the ever-obstinate Nick Compton, have added 36 so far for Middlesex's third wicket, defying Warwickshire on a grey and ferociously windy day, but it's not dampening the enthusiasm of several parties of school children who are cheering and making lots of noise. Good for them. Jumping on down, trying to keep warm, I shouldn't wonder. Middlesex are 88 for 2, replying to Warwickshire's 342.
You wish you were in there with them, don't you? Bouncing up and down and making a load of noise.
I call it a living, really, making a living.
That's very true. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Mike Taylor. Coverage continues on our website. Just have a look, BBC Coventry and Warwickshire Online, and you can listen via the BBC Sport app as well. Now, let's find out some more about Stacey Jade Mason, who's with us in the studio, the director of Creative Optimistic Visions, and also a survivor of child exploitation. We'll talk about the company that you founded and what it does precisely in a few minutes' time. There's this phrase that you use, feeling safe as well, that I want to explore, because I've got a big circle around that. But you were groomed by an older man at the age of 14. You didn't know you were being groomed, though, did you?
No, I didn't. You know, this person was someone that had befriended me through taking part in outside school extracurricular activities.
Okay.
So I joined this group from around about the age of 14, and at the time I'd not long moved from one school to another. I moved on the other side of the city, so I was feeling quite lonely, quite you know, a bit down and isolated, and this group was something that was really important to me. It gave me a sense of belonging. And especially one of the instructors that, you know, that led the group, I felt quite valued to know that someone was there to listen to me and support me through how I was feeling at the time, really.
So you just thought he was looking out for you?
Well, yes, that's right.
But he wasn't. And then a relationship began.
Yes, I mean, you call it a relationship, but a lot of things had happened in between that. I was...
Well, tell us what happened then. How did it work?
Well, it took, you know, it wasn't something that kind of, like, happened overnight, really. It was quite a long process of him befriending me and gaining his trust and spending a lot of time with him, really.
So how did he do it? Because you think of, you know, the phrase grooming. What did it involve? Because at 14, you're still vulnerable, but you're, you know, there's I'm guessing a little bit of sophistication. It's not like buying somebody sweets and stuff. How does it work as a process?
Well, I think it's about tuning into someone, really.
Okay.
And like you say, finding where that person is a little bit vulnerable, and trying to find a common ground and, you know, creating that relationship, building that trust, gaining that rapport with someone, and therefore over time becoming more and more part of and more dominant within this person's life, so to speak.
So that he starts to control you a bit.
Well, as the relationship got into an intimate relationship, then further on down the line, he did become more controlling and a lot more dominating and a lot more aggressive with his behaviours. But at first, obviously, he was a completely different person to that. So, you know, it was quite a long time of him befriending me and paying me a lot of attention before things started moving on into sexual terms. And that really, when things started to get sexual. I'm not talking even around sexual actual behaviours, but it started around conversation. So him kind of like putting things out in conversation for him to gain an understanding of where was I at that age, how far had I gone with boys, what were my thoughts around these different sexual acts or these different kind of relationships, but bringing it in slowly and surely within conversation, increasingly with the more amount of time that we spent together.
So you trusted him, so you were quite prepared to offer up this information. At no point did you think, this is a bit weird, this is a bit wrong?
I think around about at that time, there was something inside me, my instinctive feelings, that didn't quite feel right. And that's something that in protective behaviours that we call our early warning signs. So that's how our body physically reacts to when we feel unsafe. So for example, when you hear people saying, oh, it's just that gut feeling, you know, I've just got that feeling, I can't really explain it, I just know that something's not right. But I never had that education back then. I weren't aware of these kind of things, and so I ignored them.
So you just thought, I'm being daft. He's looking out for me. I trust him.
Yeah.
This is all right.
Yeah.
How old was he? You're 14. How old was he?
He was 20 years my senior.
Oh, gosh. Right,
yeah.
Okay. And he eventually managed to manipulate you into a sexual relationship.
Yeah, and he was quite clever on how he went about that as well. He told me, he disclosed after a while that he told me that he loved me. And that he wanted to show me that he loved me by making love with me.
Mm.
And I did say, you know, oh, I don't really know about that, you know, I don't think we should be, you know, doing anything like that. And at the time when we were having this conversation, at the time he was being very understanding about my thoughts and my choice, but he was very persistent in wanting to show me that he loved me and how important it was for him, for us to have this special moment. So after a lot of persuasion, I agreed to spend the night with him. So we planned to have a night together, and it weren't until things started kind of like progressing in a sexual way. I didn't want to take it any further, and he raped me. And after that, I left the premises that we were at, and I went to find one of my friends who was out uptown at the night, which I know wasn't very good at that age. But I actually went into town, and she came out of where she was at, and she supported me through that evening.
Did you not at that point think, do you know what, I need to tell someone, I need to phone the police, because he raped you?
I didn't think about contacting the police.
Why?
Because of how I felt at that time.
But were you blaming yourself?
In a sense, because I had agreed to spend the night with him, and therefore I felt like, in a sense, that I had a part to play in that.
So had you recognised it as a rape, is what I'm getting at that point? Did you know that what he'd done to you was wrong, and it was rape? Did you recognise it as that?
I think my knowledge and my understanding of rape at the time was a woman or a man being taken off the street by a stranger and being sexually assaulted. But obviously we're now more aware, and fortunately, you know, sexual offences are being brought up in discussion and are, you know, at the forefront of a lot of people's minds now in order to gain a greater understanding of that. And I think that that's absolutely brilliant. But in regards to how I was feeling, this was a person that I trusted, and this was a person that I had a lot of respect for, and his reaction at the end of when, you know, I eventually pushed him off, he was very angry, he was very upset, and violent to, you know, other objects around him. At that point, he wasn't violent against me. So I was more scared than anything, and I needed the comfort and the support of a friend rather than a police officer at that time.
So your friend supported you through it?
Yes.
What did he do next? Was he sorry? Did he go out of his way to make it all up to you?
Well, I didn't go and take part within that club then for probably around about a couple of weeks, but within that time he was quite persistent in calling me. And I did challenge him about that situation, and his response was that it was my fault. I led him on. You know, I agreed to spend that night with him. You know, why would I agree to do something like that and then at the last minute, you know, change my mind? And I did feel guilty about that. So eventually I did go back to the sporting activity and take part, and after a few weeks we then became friends, and things were like kind of like back to normal, so to say, after that.
As normal as it could ever be. Listen, we'll have a listen to Air Supply after this and talk some more about, you know, how you recognise that what happened to you was wrong.
Yeah.
And how you came out the other side and tried to help other people. We'll talk some more about that in just a moment.
2020 cricket is back. Last time.
He bowls and put his game right through for four byes. And the Bears have won.
Yeah, it was a bit tight. And the Embers didn't expect to go right to the last ball, but it did. And yeah, we got over the line, so I'm pretty pleased.
Next time. Warwickshire take on Durham. Hear full commentary. We're live Saturday afternoon from 2:30. A winning team. The Bears and BBC Coventry in Warwickshire.
Green grass of home.
Tom Jones at 20 to 1. Trisha Doody then with you after 1 o'clock today. At the moment, though, in the studio with me is Stacey Jade Mason, who's the Director of Creative Optimistic Visions, which is a great... Well, it helps other people avoid what she went through, which basically was being groomed and sexually abused by a man who, well, in effect, was in a sort of position of responsibility in your life, which makes it worse. Now, you were telling us a few minutes ago how this man raped you.
Yeah.
And subsequently, you embarked on a relationship, we're calling it, but it isn't. It was a 9-month cycle of abuse where, you know, to 14-year-old you, you've got a 34-year-old boyfriend. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. I mean, from the time that from the first incident of sexual abuse of when he raped me, I had not long turned 15
right.
at that point. So the grooming was from the age of 14, and then I went through onto my 15th birthday, and that incident happened. And like I said before, I didn't go back to the sporting place that I went to until a couple of weeks after, but within that time he was quite persistent in calling me, probably to cover his own back, really. I'm not too sure, but I did challenge him, as I said earlier on, about what had happened, and the blame was all put on me. And in the way that he worded it, the way that he spoken with me in regards to how as to how it was my fault, I did internalise that, and I did believe that, and I felt a massive sense of guilt, and that in a sense, because I'd agreed to spend that night with him, and, you know, how dare I change my mind. You know, so I did feel like I had a played a part in that. So I kind of like thought, right, okay, well, let's just put that, you know, brush that under the carpet and moved on. I loved the activity that I was taking part in so much, and the group of people that I was with. Like I said before, I had a great sense of belonging with these people.
So you were prepared to
I was.
To put up with him to cope with that. At what point did anybody intervene? Did anybody think, you know, that this friendship you had with this man was inappropriate, was wrong? What happened?
No, because I think the more and more that I took part within the activities with the group, the more my skills had developed. So I grew more within that sporting activity. So it became more of involved within my life, therefore I was then spending more time with him, so it was just no one really from the outside had any kind of like suspicion or felt uneasy, because the activity that I was taking part in meant so much to me. It's like someone that does dance, or someone that, you know, does swimming or horse riding.
You just
they come into it and they go and it becomes part of their life, and that was exactly what this was for me.
Mm. So you carried on, and
yes.
in the end it was sort of 9-10 months, that's right, that you
yeah, it was around about that time. I mean, like I say, after returning to the place, and you know, our relationship then kind of like moved forward in regards to, you know, him still being friendly to me, still being really nice, and that was good because of the feelings that were relating to that past event.
What?
I was happy that we were now back on track and now friends again.
But he was still abusing you.
Well, there was no, at that time, there was no, within that short amount of time, there was no sexual abuse going on.
Okay.
It wasn't until later on that we were then good friends again, that he confided in me that he was very poorly, and that he didn't really want me to tell anyone that he was poorly, but he had disclosed that to me. So that was, he, in a sense, I then felt sorry for him because he was poorly and he didn't want to disclose that with anyone else, so therefore he would then talk with me about that worry about his illness.
So he's getting that special friendship going on again. So
again, yeah, so it was rebuilding that friendship and that trust yet again. So it was quite, it's not like this just happened overnight. He was very manipulative and, you know, he knew his intentions of when, you know, in each and every conversation that we were having, he knew what he was doing.
When did it stop? What made it stop?
What made it stop was it weren't until later on down the line, as I thought that our relationship was more of the norm, that he got a premises that I thought was for the two of us to use. So he got a flat where we would stay together, and I would tell my parents that I'm staying with my friend for the night or a couple of nights and we would be there. And for me, that was like us as a couple. And, you know, I'm coming up to reaching 16 now. And when I'm 16, I'm therefore legal and I can tell the whole world about our love. And I was really willing to take on the world and what people would have had to have said, that what my parents would have said. But within that time, the more and more closer that got, unfortunately, I didn't even know I was pregnant at the time, but unfortunately I did suffer a miscarriage. And I was dropped off by him outside the hospital and kind of like, okay, you can go on in. And he never come in.
How old were you then? 15?
I was 16 at this point. Yeah.
Wow. And he left you to cope with that alone?
Yeah, he dropped me off outside the hospital, and it was the old mother and baby hospital at the time. And dropped me off out there, and, you know, he was busy, he had to do other things. But now I realise, looking back, that pressure was getting onto him now, and he was going to be found out sooner or later.
Who found out? Who was it that found out and stopped this?
He became more obsessive and more controlling, phone calls all the time, and very, very threatening behaviour. He was threatening to hurt me and my family, because I think one of the biggest things for me was keeping it a secret, not being able to talk with anyone, because at the time the whole process was a mixture of relationships. Sometimes being with him at the time, at that point in my life, I could say that I had some of the greatest days with him, you know, good times, fun, we were happy, we laughed, we joked. But then on the flip side of that, I would have some of the most frightening, and still now, days that, you know, that will stick with me forever, where I felt extremely unsafe. So it was conflicting all the time, and I had no one to speak with about that, and no one that could understand, and it was about getting found out. That's what I was really, really frightened of.
Well, no doubt he was as well. So how did it all sort of come to a conclusion?
It come about in the end because a family member overheard him on the phone with me being very threatening me over the phone, and she could see how distraught and panicked I was on the phone. I actually felt like I had a cage around me. I felt physically trapped, and he's on the other end of the phone. He weren't even in the room. And that's when I then disclosed to her about everything that had gone on, and it was like a whole weight had been lifted off my shoulders.
I should think it probably has. Now, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, because we've only got limited time in a radio studio, and you've been through all of this, and just one horrifying thing after another, yet you've managed to sort of pop out the other side. You've established your own company, Creative Optimistic Visions, and that uses different techniques, doesn't it, to help other people not fall into the... Because what you did was fall into a series of traps that this very clever man sort of laid in your life, and what you want to try and do is clear away the debris so people can see these traps.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, Vic, I think the main point of me coming here today was to raise awareness of this issue, but also if anyone is listening, it don't matter, you know, how old you are and whether you're going through this or whether you have been through this, it's never too late to talk with someone about that. And when I was... back in 2010, I started volunteering for Youth Offenders, and I was introduced as part of my training to something called the Protective Behaviours Process. And they have two main themes, and that is we all have the right to feel safe all the time. And theme two being we can talk with someone about anything, even if it is awful or small. And for me, this process allowed me to gather my thoughts and my feelings, and I used it as a coping strategy, but it was a coping strategy with a comfort blanket in a sense. So therefore, when I left uni, I always focused my study on child protection, because I'm a great believer in prevention work, and that's what COV is all about, even though we do support people through one-to-one mentoring and group work. But my projects are all about prevention of victimisation by educating children, young people and people of all ages about protective behaviours. And I do that in a different by delivering different projects through various different creative outlets. So, for example, the Urban Arts Project educates young people around protective behaviours, but through the art of lyricism. So we use their musical influences to inspire their learning. So that's a one-step removed approach.
So you're talking to people essentially on a way that they understand, in a non-scary way, and in a way that they'll get, which is genius. I don't know why more people aren't doing it. I wish you all the very best of it. You've got a website. What's the address?
It's www.creativeoptimisticvisions.co.uk.
Let us know how you get on.
Thank you.
Even if it's just one person that you save.
That's right.
You're all right now, aren't you? You've got a child of your own. You're a mum now.
I've got two children. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I bet you're the best mum in the world as well. Listen, thank you so much for coming
to
see us. It's been a real pleasure to meet you, Stacey Jade Mason. So brave.